I just flew in from Atlanta, and boy, are my open standards tired. Hi there. Yeah, probably funnier in my head. Welcome to another episode of Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry, brought to you by eejournal.com. I'm Amelia Dalton, and yes, folks, I have been inventing, connecting, inspiring, and thriving at this year's Embedded Tech Trends Conference in Atlanta, Georgia. So what exactly is the Embedded Tech Trends Conference? Well, it's a yearly high-tech summer camp of sorts, without the camp part and in the winter. So maybe that analogy doesn't quite work all the way. But it is a great event where suppliers of component, board, and system-level solutions get together with select relevant industry media, yes, including yours truly, to discuss technologies, trends, and products. And at the heart of the Embedded Tech Trends is VIDA, an incorporated nonprofit organization of vendors and users that all have a common interest in real-time, modular embedded computing systems and open technology standards. But at this year's conference, another acronym really took center stage, SOSA, Sensor Open Systems Architecture. So what is SOSA? Why is it important? And what does it have to do with VIDA? Well, I'm glad you asked, because my first guest this week is Roger Hoskins from Pentek, and we're talking about all of this and more. My guest today is Roger Hoskins from Pentek. Thank you so much for joining me, Roger.
My pleasure to be here, Amelia.
Okay, so first off, we are talking about the SOSA Consortium. But for my audience who may not know, what is SOSA all about and how did it come to be?
SOSA really came about as a result of the initiatives of each of the three services, the U.S. Army, the Navy, and the Air Force, developing their own version of open standards and how they thought it should be done and what the specifications should be for their needs. And it soon became apparent that if the government was going to be buying product to those standards, that those standards were going to have to be blended somehow into a single standard, and everybody soon realized that that was going to be very efficient from a standpoint of the government, instead of to buy to three different ideas of what it should be, is to buy to one. Thereby, the three services agreed that they should converge to a single standard, taking the best parts of each of their individual standards to make a new super standard called SOSA, which stands for Sensor Open System Architecture. And sensor is a part of course, antennas. It could be any kind of optical sensors. It could be infrared optical. It could be antennas. It could be transducers. So it's basically collecting information that the warfighter needs in order to complete his mission, whether it's gathering intelligence, evading detection by the enemy by a radar, avoiding being struck by a missile or a warhead when you're, you know, either on the ground, in the air, or at sea. That's it in a nutshell.
Okay, so let's back up a little bit. Now, a big announcement last year around this time, which involved MOSA, Modular Open System Architectures. So tell me about the objectives of this announcement and what has been done in the last year to address these objectives.
Well, last year, the idea that there needed to be one standard had already matured and come to being, except for the first time, the three services issued a joint memo. DOD, three services got together, the Secretary of the Army, the Secretary of the Navy, and the Secretary of the Air Force issued a joint memo saying that from now on, all of our procurements are going to be open standards based. And SOSA is the main standard that they referenced in that tri-service announcement.
So tell me a little bit about the overall mandates for SOSA. What are we looking at here?
One prime objective is to save cost. By having much better defined variations of the different types of components that go into government systems to a relatively small set of different boards, the government can benefit by having vendors, multiple vendors, compete for the business to produce those products.
Right.
Number two, they want to have interoperability so that if you have a system that contains a SOSA board, you could take out one board and replace it with another one. And because those boards comply to the standard, they will most likely operate instead of having to restructure everything, rewrite software, redo hardware. Incompatibilities now exist all over the place if you try to do that. So they want to get rid of that. They also want to be able to insert new technology so that as new devices become available, new chips, new types of sensors, new types of antennas or radars, they want to be able to upgrade the systems that they have today by plugging in compatible cards according to the standard without having to scrap the other system. The other thing is that they want to be able to use one system to do a lot of different operations. They want to be able to share the hardware that's in one system, the compute engines, the acquisition engines for A to D converters and other interfaces, so that you could use the same box potentially for doing radar work, electronic warfare, or communications, for example, without having to have a separate box for each of those different functions.
So in your presentation at the Embedded Tech Trends conference, you mentioned the gray box concept. Tell me more about this. Is it super cool?
Okay, it is. If you think about the benefit for the vendors, people who make the boards, it's not always in their best interest to be able to have a competitor have to comply with exactly the same thing and the same standard, and then all you're doing is really just competing on price for the same thing. So in order to protect the investment that each of the vendors makes, you know, we're a board vendor and we spend a lot of money designing how our boards are made and what goes on inside. And a lot of it has to do with FPGA code and software and other intellectual property that we've put into it. So what SOSA says, the gray box, what it means is they want to know what the box does functionally from its interface to the outside world. But they do not want to know, they don't care how you do it inside. And so the intellectual property that the vendor puts inside is protected and is his own. But your interfaces better comply, hardware and software, with the standard. Otherwise, it's a no start.
Now, you're also at Pentek, so you guys just announced a new Quartz RF SoC board aligned with the technical standard for that SOSA reference architecture. So tell me more about this announcement.
Okay. We are very actively involved in the hardware subcommittee of the technical working group of SOSA. This is an ongoing process, and they're headed towards the snapshot number 3, which is a set of specifications that will be released, we think, sometime in April of this year. The next step will be to finally adopt the standard and make it official. That's going to be a little ways off yet, too. But in the meantime, vendors can announce products that have been designed in conformance with the SOSA standard, technical standard. So when you are aligned that way with those words, because you can't claim conformance, if you do that, you will not obviously be officially conformant, but you can work in demonstration systems. You can reply to government requests for proposals and say, I don't have it yet because it's not there, but I have what I think is going to be. Mm-hmm. And if you are competing with other vendors in a government request for proposal and you know, pretty much there, right, then you'll probably have a better chance of winning the business. And the government will be attracted to your offer because he knows that when the standard is finally released, he's likely to have a short path to having his chassis, his system, be conformant. That's the idea. So it's going to be a gradual process.
All right, Roger. It is time for your off-the-cuff question now. You get a new off-the-cuff here. You could have dinner tonight with one person, alive or dead. I'm an appropriate answer as well. Who would it be?
All right. I'm gonna have to say Abraham Lincoln. He's always been one of my favorites, and the guy really was a leader, and he was intelligent. He was compassionate. I mean, we wouldn't have a single union today if it wasn't for Abraham Lincoln. Yeah. He got it together. He probably has a million wonderful stories.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Roger. It is always a pleasure speaking with you.
And same to you. Thank you, Amelia.
Another big theme at this year's Embedded Tech Trends Conference was AI. Please welcome Doug Patterson from AI Tech. Doug and I are talking about AI in defense, industrial, and space applications. Let's go.
My guest today is Doug Patterson. Thank you so much for joining me, Doug.
Thank you very much.
So we're talking about AI processing. It's having a bigger and bigger role in today's defense, industrial, and space applications. So Doug, what kind of defense applications in particular are you seeing in this realm?
The kinds of applications we're seeing are very small systems that are embedded at the edge where the processing needs to take place closer to the sensor. Rather than having all of those cameras run cables and putting all sorts of weight on the vehicle and loading it down with power and trying to get all of that applications processing done on the main mission computer, it could be done locally, video, audio, compressed, and then sent down gigabit Ethernet to post-processing or to telemetry to download. Kinds of applications are small UAVs, larger UAVs, even maritime ships, where it puts a video bubble around a ship so that it notifies the command center of an approaching boat or an approaching vehicle, you know, if it's on land or if it's on dockside, that could be suspicious, and it alerts the crew that something's happening. So it's reconnaissance and surveillance. It's all of these kinds of applications. It's everywhere. It doesn't matter about the environment that it's in, whether it's defense or whether it's commercial, whether it's industrial or space. It's the same issue, is surveillance and reconnaissance. And being able to do that smart applications processing out at the edge, out at the sensor, pre-processing that data, and then providing that information back. Autonomous systems, I mean, it completely runs by itself because that's what you've programmed it to do. And again, having all that power and performance with low power, that's the key, low power, is allowing systems to be much more agile and much more impactful on the environment and on the services that are using them, like putting it on a wearable computer on a soldier and being able to do situational awareness in the environment that he's in. It saves lives.
Absolutely. Now let's talk about industrial applications. What are you seeing there?
Industrial espionage is coming back in a fervor with cybersecurity and cyber hacking, as well as people just generally sneaking into compounds and stealing intellectual property. There are very large companies that are putting camera-mounted systems with AI located in the camera, looking for areas, looking for motion, and being able to identify and track what someone is doing, whether they're motioning, if they're carrying a broomstick, or whether they're carrying something a little more lethal. And those kinds of things are happening every day, and it's a huge investment that a company makes, and yet, what company doesn't want to protect their IP?
Sure. Now, let's talk about those space applications. Where are you seeing that coming into play?
Surveillance and reconnaissance, the perfect application again. The applications that you've heard in the past, you know, whether you thought it was true or not, about satellites being able to read license plates, no, that's not true. They're actually able to tell if Doug Patterson has a new mole. So I've seen that kind of resolution. I've seen those kinds of cameras, telescope applications, you know, pointing either in the sky, looking at the sun, looking at stars, looking at quasars, and being able to pre-process data, compress it, and then send it down via telemetry. It's just saving all sorts of system bandwidth, and it's reducing power.
All right. And you guys have a Jetson-based development system at AI Tech that addresses some of this. Tell me more about that.
You could go to NVIDIA and buy the development system from them and then spend probably the next part of 3 months trying to find all of the drivers and all of the other application software and all the compilers and all the linkers and try to pull that together and spend months and months and months and thousands of dollars. Or you can buy a development system from AI Tech. It does use the NVIDIA-based development environment, but we provide all of the libraries, all of the drivers, all of it's integrated, and it's all for the rugged system platform that we provide. It therefore provides the customer the ability, and they've told us this, that they're up and running in 10 minutes out of the box, and they're developing their code in a half an hour. Talk about value. Yeah. And the customers do appreciate that, and we're getting calls from customers saying, this is fantastic. Thank you.
All right, Doug, it is time for your off-the-cuff question. Now, you have one person that you're going to sit down and have dinner with tonight. They can be alive or dead. Your pick. Who would it be?
Steve McQueen, without a doubt. I think he was an unbelievable guy, kind of mischaracterized by Hollywood as the bad boy of the world. But if you listen to some of the interviews he did and some of the thoughts he had about, you know, automobiles and vehicles and motorcycles, which I personally happen to like, I would love to be able to talk airplanes, too. He loved flying. And he would fly out of Santa Paula, which is about 20 miles from my house. So I'd just love to talk to the guy if I could.
That's a good answer. I appreciate that, Doug. All right. Well, I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me yet again, Doug.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/EEJournal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at EEJournalTFM. And don't forget, if you want to follow my personal Twitter account, check out AmeliaD1978. And hey, if LinkedIn is more your thing, well, sure, you can follow us on LinkedIn as well. And we have a YouTube channel, youtube.com/EEJournal. Folks, it is chock full of all kinds of super cool techie videos, including our very popular Chalk Talk webcast series, hosted by you know who. And you can subscribe to our EE Journal YouTube channel as well. Also, by clicking the links below the player on this week's Fish Frying page, you can check out the Fish Fry archive or subscribe to the Fish Fry via the iTunes store. And remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, just head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Frying page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, any fun EE conference coming up that I absolutely should attend, or even the best geeky hotspot in your city, shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of January 31st, 2020, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.